our faith is dear to us, Liberians. That's one thing that carries us to our faith.
Religion is an intrinsic part of Liberians' lives, whether they practice Christianity, Islam, or traditional beliefs. The church has always been a fundamental aspect of every channel of Liberian life. Community activist Seyon Yongwole.
Liberia was used as the country of vehicle to Christianize Africa. And since in the 1800s, Christianity was born in Liberia and spread its wings to all of Africa. So given that history, you know, one would think that the country itself is a Christian nation, which of course it is. That does not erase the fact that we have other practicing faith, the Islam and you know, cultural form of worship. We have all of those. But Christianity is the predominant religion in Liberia. And it also safe to say, by evidence, we have a number of churches here we have in the Liberian community. You know, even the barbershop, if the barbershop will permit, people will come and worship on Sunday. The next day, Monday to Tuesday to Saturday, is the barbershop. On Sunday, it's the church.
Abdullah Kiyotamba, publisher of the Liberian Journal.
The church is a fundamental aspect because someone, somewhere is related to it. There's so many Liberian churches in Minnesota, more than any other states. That's one of the unique aspects, actually. Any other state in America.
State Representative Keith Ellison.
I'm impressed with the amount of religious tolerance. The mosque I go to has an imam who's from Liberia. And yet, I've been to Liberian churches. They know I'm Muslim. I'm welcome there. You know what I mean? So Liberians don't fight over that kind of stuff. And I admire that tremendously. Because there are places in this world where being the wrong religion will get you killed. Not Liberia. You can worship as you choose. And this is a tremendous asset.
Activist and organizer, Peace Otar.
We have strong Liberian spiritual leaders who people have, just like back home, complete faith in that they're hopefully leading us the right way. And people can feel that they can depend on the church family.
It's playing a powerful role. Folks who face serious financial problems try to build a sense of community and support system. Stand with you, difficult moments, pray. There's that sense of belonging, sense of security some people find. Some folks don't have no family. They have no skills. The church is their family. You know, they get connected, they go to church every Sunday, feel connected or something. I think the church has, to some extent, in terms of helping the community, has exist as a structure that you can rely on for something. But their potential is underutilized, especially to achieve the Liberian agenda, is vastly underutilized.
That's another group of leaders that we can tap into, the church leaders, because again, people are very grounded in their faith. They really believe in respecting the pastor, believe in the pastor, always trying to lead them the right way. You know, and they will listen to the pastors and the spiritual leaders, you know. So whether it's the imam or, you know, the pastors at the church or the imam at the mosque, those are people that people from those different faiths will listen to. So that's another, and that's why, like I said, you know, they've always been called into the crisis to help manage crises and stuff like that. And they've been very successful in doing that, you know, because people have, over the past years, as I've seen it, people have listened to the pastors once they got involved. So definitely we can tap into the pastor's leadership ability to help, you know, bring the community together.
When it comes to religion, religion is a heavy thing in the Liberian community. It's truly respected in the Liberian community. And the influence is there. And you can't deny that.
You know, everybody's involved in church life, and so that's great. I think that's the one thing that I've remained constant.
You can see evidence of the growth of the Liberian community in the growth of the youth population. However, with this growth comes challenges, as the community struggles with the classic African dilemma between tradition and modernism. Educator and organizer Yema Brewer.
A lot of the population is growing because of the younger portion of the population is growing very fast. So this is a group that have this kind of bicultural experience. And so there's a lot of intergenerational issues. When you talk to the young people that are growing up here, they're saying they can't relate or communicate with their parents, with their elders. They have, you know, there's a lot of do as I say, not as I do. You know, they're dealing with very strict parents. But when you talk to, when I talk to adults too, a lot of whom are raising their children here or brought children to this country at a young age, they're saying they're having a hard time communicating with their kids. And they are concerned about the things that their kids are being exposed to in this kind of more open society where the faster you learn how things work here, as far as how the system works, you know, how everything works, you have an upper hand. And what's happening is that the kids that they're raising here are having an upper hand because not only are they older, but they're from a different culture and society. And so their kids are almost, you know, having to help them along. But then that creates this parent-child dynamic. And our culture is very much about respect of elders and respect for family and things like that.
Entrepreneur and clinical researcher Aurelius Butler.
There's a struggle right now because the older Liberians are trying to hang on to the culture as we knew it. And then the younger Liberians are trying to break out of that. So they're looking more to their surroundings. How do people their age behave in this society? They are Liberians, but at the same time, they live in a society that behaves differently. So how can they behave this way and still be Liberians? So there's that constant struggle. And you find in a lot of cases that what wins out is how the larger community of young people behave. But then when they come home, then we have to try to ground them again. No, this is who you are and this is what you have to be. So we have the young people going out there, seeing things that we didn't see at that age, doing things that a lot of us didn't do at that age, experimenting with things that we didn't even dare experiment with. You know, so they're trying to, I guess, pull us kicking and screaming into this new world while we're trying to pull them back into the old world.
Each age group, you know, each group, depending on when they came here and the experiences they faced, so it has a different perspective. And so I think if you focus on that group that came here as young adults, very young adults, they quickly try to still adapt and take advantage of those opportunities and start working because they were already adults. And even they have some differences. Their outlook is different from that older group, our parents, our grandparents. But those of us like myself who practically grew up here, you know, have this identity crisis and a need to really be as American as possible. And we were facing a lot of the same issues that just your American-born, average American kid is facing, too, with media influence and having to have the latest this and that. And so you're seeing a lot of that play out. And I think that is a prime example of the challenges that we're seeing in the community.
We speak with some of the youth in the community about their perspective on these issues and how it affects their lives. The youth include Maui Appleton, Marion Uwolo, Grace Lawrence, and Waleji Sween.
Okay, being a Liberian youth in Minnesota, it's like I said at the beginning, it's like from Africa, we still have our culture at home. Like my dad usually said, in this house is like Africa. You go out the door, that's America.
Even though we say Africa was hard, America is hard, let's be honest. You know, we come to this country, we don't know what to do. To have anything, to be a legal person, everything is paperwork. To drive, paperwork. To braid hair, to cook, to be something in the future is paperwork. And in Africa, we don't have to do all that stuff. So I feel like it's really, really tough on us, you know? And our parents ain't helping us with this.
Okay, you don't know what is going on. You should also take the time and understand, at least get a little bit of knowledge on what is going on. Because this is not how it used to be for you when you was a teenager. This is America. This is a new country. So at least, like, take the time, at least, and talk to your child.
It goes both ways because, like, for our African parents, you know, their life is based on rules. It's based on responsibilities. It's based on choices, you know. The choices you made today will affect you tomorrow. You make the right one, your life will be easier in the long run.
Well, I think that experience is, like, the best lesson ever because us teenager, we don't listen to our parents until the thing actually happened to us.
I said possible ways that the more communication we have with each other, the better things will be for both of us.
But you have to know that you still love, and no matter what, you have to know you still love your mom, you still love your whoever that born you, because there's nobody can replace that person.
You need your parents. I don't care how old you are, you still need your parents to be there for you in order to better yourself.
The Liberian Women's Initiative is widely respected as an organization that is trying to address these issues. We're joined by the executive director of the organization, Doris Parker, and youth coordinator, Aquila Roberts Ford, along with Planned Parenthood's Yema Brewer.
What we try to do is to meet some little need. Let the girls know that who are in our programs, whatever problem you're having, we're here, we can help in our weak way. We somebody to talk to so you don't get frustrated, and encourage them that they can do better. They can be whatever they want to be. We have a responsibility right now to arrest the situation with the younger ones and see how we can get them involved and find some creative ways, you know. I really think if that's done, we can have more youth involvement, and, you know, it can move the community, you know, forward, because they can play a very important role.
The impact we've seen is that a lot of the girls are getting a little bit more engaged.
There's a need for us to build upon the sense of community that we have, although there's, you know, there's some divisions in the community and things like that, but we still have a sense of community. We haven't been here so long that we still don't have this sense of community. People are still living predominantly in certain parts of the area. We're still worshiping together in the mosques and in the churches. And so we still need to use that sense of community to really try to talk about these issues that we have.
Culturally, in the autistic community, Liberians are not there, you know? I mean, and it seems so different from back home when I was a little girl growing up. Liberia was all about the autistic community. Those were the people you lifted up. You know, you watched the shows on TV. They were all actors doing plays and programs for the evening television. You heard about the dance groups that traveled, the choirs that left Liberia to travel and sing and make music. And then you have the war, and all of that just disappears. So I think there's a huge sense of loss when it comes to the autistic community. You don't see the young people getting involved, because I think that's a great venue for them to express themselves and deal with all the issues they're doing. But if you go to the autistic community in the U.S., where there's other Africans, there's very little few Liberians represented. And my sense is that I think people are more concerned with what they're going to eat, where they're going to sleep, you know, how they're going to get jobs, than the arts. They feel like the arts doesn't give them what they need as refugees or immigrants. So
it's part of our culture. It's deeply rooted in our culture. The village-based drama. You know, if you go to the villages and stuff, people gather around in the moonlight, and they, you know, to tell stories, to do drama, you know, to tell jokes. You know, comedy is huge in the Liberian in a community. You know, I think if you were to, you know, come up with a script that would resonate with people, you know, people want some authentic Liberian art, and they will support it.
Though many in the Liberian community feel that the artistic arena is where the community is weakest, there has been a wellspring of Liberian artists and artistic activity in Minnesota.
I think it is the truth that the artistic community is just coming up, because a lot of times it takes so much money, or at least that's what people believe, that it takes money to break through, and because a lot of people who are artists are younger. So it's been a really big challenge.
Educator and organizer Winfred Russell.
A lot of the Liberian artists, whether musicians, and actors and actresses and stuff, they just seem to be concentrated in the churches. And one approach would be to get to, you know, to the churches.
Artist and activist Mamini George.
And most of the art is in music. I think because it's an easier, at least to Liberians, it's an easier way to make money. It's more popular. A lot of Liberians love music. They love to party. So that's where the artists are. But I do see some artists in other aspects, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when I was in Liberia and here in Minnesota, I mean, Liberian hip-hop artists can flow with the best of them, you know. Liberian, you know, dancers, you know, Liberian costume, clothing makers.
Edna Stevens, artist and founder of Universal Dance Destiny.
There are lots of Liberian dancers, but not companies. I pull them in. You know, I pull them in so we can all dance together. So I've done a lot of shows with other dancers here.
Tarka Zonin, organizer and director of Shoes for Liberia.
There are a lot of young filmmakers now, Liberian filmmakers, who are coming up with a lot of different movies to actually tell the Liberian story versus back then where, you know, these movies were produced by non-Liberians. So you can't really see, you know, the Liberian tradition, you know, in those films.
There has been a growing momentum of Liberian-related theater productions in Minnesota. Though never produced, Kia Corthoran's Tap the Leopard was commissioned by the Guthrie Theater, a reading of which was presented in 2006. Two recent productions include Pa's Hat by Liberian playwright Corey Thomas and Eclipse by playwright and actress Danai Guerrera. In this excerpt, we hear a scene from Pa's Hat featuring Regina Williams and Ansa Echea, directed by Marion McClinton and produced by Pillsbury House Theater in June of 2010.
All right, what about my passports?
I'm an American citizen. In fact, he took my passport. You have my bag there with my ticket. If you look, you'll see. So if you would please let the American Embassy know that we're here. Thank you.
You said the old man's your pop?
Yes.
I thought you might be his nurse. His passport, is it American or is it Liberian?
Would you please contact the embassy before I know?
Alas, no phone.
You can take us there. Or you can send someone.
Oh, I can take you back to the cell. Now answer me, the old man's passport. Is it American or Liberian?
Sir, I don't think you understand. He's my father. If I'm American, he must be American.
You know what I think. I think number 14 is back in Liberia again.
Number 14, what are you talking about, number 14? My father lives in America. The American Embassy is aware that we're here, and we're supposed to be on that plane going back tomorrow.
What are they going to do, huh? My leader, President Charles Taylor, not answering to Americans. You have broken the law. I am the one interrogating you. And the old man is traveling without any identification.
He has identification. He left his passport in his suitcase. We can get it for you if you want.
You Americans think you're something special, or you think you can do as you please simply because you're an American.
Okay, well, actually, I'm not a pure American. My mother's Brazilian, and my father's actually Liberian.
Uh-huh.
Wendy Knox, director of Frank Theater's production of Eclipse, shares her thoughts about the production and how it relates to the Liberian community.
When I think about what we learned from working on the play and also from talking to Liberians in our research and helping to inform what we're doing is, I mean, the thing that we probably heard most often was about sort of the, you know, the fire, the spirit of the Liberian people that, you know, I would say spunk, or the sort of sense of life, which, you know, in this play translates definitely into sort of a sense of survival and some great humor in the face of, you know, some pretty grim circumstances. The post-show discussions for Eclipse were among the most powerful discussions we've had. Those discussions were almost, if not more, gut-wrenching and informative and engaging as the performance itself. It's interesting that all three of those pieces that have been done or worked on locally, the Eclipse, Paws Hat, and Tap the Leopard, all deal with Liberia. So it's not about the contemporary Liberian community here now. But to me, it says something about, the emergence of this as a theme in these theater, contemporary theater works, is sort of a processing of what's going on in Liberia and how that affects us. It's Liberia sort of tapping at our consciousness and saying, this is an issue and we need to wrestle with this and address it. And doing it here, I think, gave the play a much greater and deeper resonance because of the Liberian community here. So, and for us, again, it's raising the question of looking around our community, what's going on, who do we live with, who are our neighbors, what are their stories. I think it's very exciting what we have going on in the Twin Cities with all these different communities. And I think that recognizing the strength of the Liberian community here and now looking for that artistic voice is to keep putting it out there and keep, you know, get that critical mass going, you know, so that it does emerge and become yet another sort of thread in this fabric that we've got here.
The popularity of these productions show the strong interest in issues that Liberians face and sets the stage for future productions developed from the community and by the community. Still coming into its own and yet to be recognized for its creative output, the Liberian artistic community holds a great deal of promise and shows early signs of a potential movement. History professor Peter Ratcliffe.
I struggle a lot with my students here at McAllister with Du Bois's notion of double consciousness and the veil, and the question of, is Du Bois saying it's a bad thing or a good thing? And I think that Du Bois was so smart that he knew it was both. And so how does double consciousness become a good thing? How do people who move back and forth between these universes begin to have access to insights and ways to articulate them that those of us whose lives tend to be contained in one or the other never really achieve ourselves? And I think that's where the breakthrough is going to come. And it's going to mean it's going to be places here, like the Twin Cities, that this younger generation of Liberians are going to have things to say that none of us can even anticipate. And I think that the time is right that this is happening among Liberians. And so this new identity, new sense of awareness is emerging in our midst. And I do think that it's the younger generation, the ones that either came here as children or were even born here, that they're the ones who are going to start to provide us with a voice that we haven't heard before. And if the experiences of other immigrant groups are an indication, it's going to be really interesting and exciting to hear that voice.
We need Liberian writers and authors and poets to open up that window so that those of us who are not Liberian can get a sense of Liberia and the Liberian American experience from these writers. And every community has got to produce its literary package. We need to have this Liberian literary contribution. And this is arts, letters, and this is film, and this is the use of internet, and this is the telling of the Liberian American story. And that's what needs to happen.
And I think we got to that point where we're like, you know what? It's about time that we, you know, like I said earlier, write our own story. It's about time that we take charge and actually make Liberia our own. And I think Liberians went to that stage now where we want to rebrand Liberia.
Hip-hop artist Blade Brown.
My purpose is that I want to inspire young African kids to wake up. Like Pac said, you know, I may not be the one to change the world, but I want to spark the brain. I was one of the brains that he sparked through his music. So now I want to be the spark for another young kid. So when they listen to my music, they feel that fire. They feel that intensity. So that's why I do it. That's what keeps fueling me. That's why I spend the money. You know what I mean? That's why I keep performing. That's why I keep going out here. That's why I do interviews. That's why I do, because it's never just about me. It's about the collective.
Charles Dennis, host of KMLJ Radio's African Roots Connection.
But I think if Liberians can shift from the mentality of, you know, I got to make money, to the mentality of this is what I love doing, my God, I think we would clam. We'll be a force to reckon with in the arts.
As the largest community of Liberians outside of Liberia, Minnesota has not only become a home away from home to over 30,000 Liberians, but a refuge providing space for the community's political drive, religious devotion, entrepreneurship, and artistry to continue to thrive.
At first, it started as a student group. You know, they came and evolved into, you know, they bringing in their families and relatives and other, you know, and now, you know, you get people fleeing war and destruction and looking for a safe place to be. So you have all these mix of situations, emotions, and all these things going on. So it's really evolved, you know, over the years, where you have a very diverse, you know, community. Diverse in all respects.
We have been building our community over a span of 30, 40 years. And I'm happy to say that over this time, there has been a lot of improvement from the early days where we were trying to just keep undercover to now where we are being more expressive and we are participating more in the community, in society.
Proprietor of TNC Barbershop, Chris Proud.
Well, I say just a light at the tunnel for Liberian community. I mean, they hold a brighter future, and I just think the biggest thing is working together. You know, that's one of the key, respecting one another and working together.
Seyon Yangwale.
If I would add anything, would be describing what is said in three levels. And on the three levels of first, I think the first level I would describe would be when Liberians first came, they were trying to know the community. You know, the level one would be to know your community, you know, where you are and who's in the community. And I think we graduated from that level one of knowing your community to what we call level two, social adjustment. We try to socialize, try to get adjusted. Then the last stage I would describe would be belongingness. And having seen the two levels, we felt that, okay, this is what we call home. So let's develop home. So we graduated from the two levels, now settling the level called belongingness. And I think if you listen to all of the speakers, I think what I gather from there is we have come to know that this is where we belong to, as much as we want to go back to give back to our own country, Liberia. But we first have to know that this is where we are. This is what we call home. And once we can develop this place called home, it's easy for us to have the capital and the willpower to be able to support project back home. So every one of us have taken different direction, but with one goal. That is, we live here too. This is our home, and we must make this place a home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. L's for the love I rip. H's for the blood we shed every day.
You've been listening to part 3 of the story of Liberians in Minnesota. This segment featured Minnesota State Representative Keith Ellison, Seyon Yangwale, Abdullah Kiatumba, Piso Tar, Yamar Brewer, Aurelius Butler, Maui Appleton, Marion Uwolo, Grace Lawrence, Willeji Sween, Doris Parker, Akila Roberts Ford, Winfred Russell, Mamini George, Edna Stevens, Tarkus Zonin, Wendy Knox, Peter Ratcliffe, Blade Brown, and Charles Dennis. Other segments also featured Oliver Clark, James Kuala, Christian Harris, Charles Duamina, and Wookie Freeman. Special thanks to Noel Raymond, Chuck One, Nancy Sarter, and KFAI Fresh Air Radio. This program has been produced by E.G. Bailey and Shay Cage. Thank you for listening. King in this rap game, top of the food chain. You rappers is my prey, caught in the lines dead. I told you my definition of hunger. The perseverance through all the pain makes you wonder. In times of crisis, I've managed.